Hi, everyone, and welcome to For Your Benefits. I am Megan Henry, Marketing Director at Century Health. In this podcast, our goal is to help benefits advisors, HR teams, and other stakeholders stay on the cutting edge of what's happening in the world of employee health benefits. And today, I am super excited to be chatting with Emma Fox, partner and COO of ePowered Benefits. We're going to be talking about how benefits advisors and employers can control healthcare costs by driving high-value care. And Emma's going to share a little bit about her personal experience with the healthcare system. So as I mentioned earlier, Emma is partner and COO of ePowered Companies, which includes five affiliate companies that contribute to a greater vision of reforming healthcare into a patient-first, quality-driven market. But that is not all. She's also an industry leader and speaker on healthcare cost containment and patient advocacy. She's a former NAHU National Leadership Chair and Education Foundation board member. And in 2020, Emma was recognized by Employee Benefits Advisor as one of the top 20 women in benefits advising. Emma, I know that this is only a bit of your accomplishments. Welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm glad we could finally get together.
Yes, yes. All right. So what am I missing? I'd love it if you could share a little bit more about the work that you do and how you got where you are.
Well, I think like most people will tell you in benefits, it was totally by accident. I'm actually not from the United States originally. I'm from the United Kingdom. And when I arrived here as a late teenager, health insurance was probably as foreign as I am. It made no sense to me whatsoever. And I just happened to be with a staffing agency who placed me in an administrative role at an insurance company. And wow. It was a learning experience for sure. A lot of life insurance initially, disability. So I kind of learned little by little. And I've been in the industry now almost 20 years, and I've had my fair share of experience with the healthcare system. But a few years ago, I kind of went rogue. I spent a lot of years working for big carriers in executive roles, and I just kind of couldn't stomach what I was witnessing anymore. And I got to the point in my career where I was kind of like, you know, I got to do something that makes me feel good. And so I left and I started ePowered Benefits with my partner, and we've been rolling now for 5 years, and we're certainly not slowing down so far.
That's great. So Emma, on your website, you say that you focus on highlighting the internal dysfunction and harmful profit motives that larger insurers inflict on plan members. So tell me more about that. What kind of harm is being done to plan members?
Well, I'd say there's a couple harmful things that are a consequence of the healthcare system and the insurance system as it sits traditionally right now. And I think a lot of people will be able to relate to this. But the first one, the most prominent one, is the quality of care. And I think there's this massive misconception that the U.S. has this incredibly high quality healthcare system, but none of the data backs that up. You could just go to Google and be like, tell me what's the best country for healthcare. And you'd have to scroll quite a ways to find the U.S. So frankly, you know, these insurance carriers and hospitals are fantastic marketers, right? They're great at advertising. And so a lot of people think that they're getting excellent care because their neighbor or their brother-in-law or someone down the road told them that. And there's a lot of trust. And then the second thing is financially. You know, we have an outrageous amount of medical bankruptcies in this country, and the majority of those people who are filing medical bankruptcy are insured under an insurance health plan. And so you have to start thinking, like, where is the disconnect here? Something is just not right. If we have over 500,000 Americans filing medical bankruptcy, and the big four carriers, or actually, I think it was the big five carriers, made like $31 billion in profit last year, something is incredibly wrong with the system. So to sum it up, it's clinical. It's poor clinical outcomes. The system, to me, is designed to just keep you in it, because the more you're in it, the more money it generates. It's pretty eye-opening. It's kind of one of those things that you can't unsee. So if you do start Googling, do so at your own risk, because you're not going to be able to back out of that.
Do you think it's safe to say that the focus is on quantity, not quality, then, for sure, right?
Oh, yeah. Even doctors, you know, the way that doctors are compensated for providing healthcare is based on volume. It's based on production. They're paid on a system that incentivizes volume of patients and referrals within a certain system. That's called an RVU, a relative value unit. It's just stuff that the average person would never know. And you don't know that you're kind of caught in this web. But yeah, it's based on getting as many patients in and out the door as possible.
You know, my mom had a stroke around the holidays and she was hospitalized. She's doing great. Everything's fine. It was actually a very small stroke, recovered very well. Probably after 2 days, she was good to go. And she had been told by a nurse friend of hers, hey, heads up, just expect to stay around 5 days because that's kind of where they like to keep you because that's where they get fully reimbursed. And there's, you know, all of these things involved in it. So you might be feeling great, but after 2 or 3 days, you're still going to be there. And she was on the 5th day, she was discharged. And we just couldn't believe it because they kept coming in and saying, everything looks great. Your vitals are great. No deficits. You'll be leaving any day now. And that 5 day mark, that's when she left. And so we were very surprised at that.
Well, I'm so glad that your mom's doing okay. That's a scary experience. But you're right. It's, you know, I might be willing to bet that the carrier pre-certified a 5 day stay. And yep. If the hospital has the permission to keep you for 5 days, they're going to keep you for 5 days because they're going to get paid for 5 days. So, you know, if they want you in for 6 and they only approve 5 at the insurance carrier, they're going to let you go on the 5th day,
right.
You know? It really does all tie together on the back end. It's just a case of having a visual into what's actually going on.
Sure, sure. And I know we talked a little bit before we started recording this episode that you've had several different experiences with our healthcare system. And I'd love to hear one or two of those experiences and sort of how those have affected your family and sort of, and also how that's affected your viewpoint on all of these things.
Yeah, I, you know, I just started talking about this a couple years ago, even though it's been in my life for, you know, 20 years now, but it was something that I was fairly ashamed of needlessly for a long time. But, you know, in 2004, I'd been in the States, I think 2 years at that point and hadn't had much need for healthcare, but I unfortunately was in an accident. Someone hit my car, drove off. And I was pregnant at the time. So I was just starting to make doctor's appointments and figuring out this whole thing out, learning what the heck a deductible was. I'm already paying premiums. Now I've got to pay more money on
co-insurance,
top of that.
Co-payments, all of that. Yeah.
I'm like, why am I paying premiums? I don't get it. So I was really trying to figure all that out. I got hit by a driver who drove off and rushed to the hospital trauma room. I think because I was pregnant, they took extra measures, which truly I'm grateful for. But then the bills start coming in and I was fine. And my daughter was fine. She was born the following year. And I couldn't make sense of it. There were hospital bills, there were ambulance bills, there were lab bills. They were just on top of each other, on top of each other. And back then, you know, I was new to the country. I was working a, you know, minimum wage job, just getting by like everybody else. And I totally couldn't afford it. This was pre-ACA, of course. So there's no limits on out-of-pockets back then, right?
Right.
And I was so overwhelmed. And for the next 12 years, probably, I went along with my life, my career. I had children. I got married. I had quite a lovely life. But for 12 years, I was still trying to figure out how to pay these bills, pay a little bit here, pay a little bit there. And then the debt would be sold to someone else. And then I would be on the phone with more collection agencies. And it got so overwhelming that finally in 2017, I filed medical bankruptcy myself. And at that point, I thought to myself, you know, I'm fairly successful at this point. I have a good job. I even work in the carriers. Like I work for the man. And if I have to file medical bankruptcy and I have all this education, all this knowledge, and I work for the company, what is the average American doing? It was probably the thing that changed my entire trajectory was signing those papers in the lawyer's office and understanding that my life was going to be changed for the foreseeable 2 or 3 years, because I couldn't even qualify for a store credit card for, you know, 2 or 3 years after the bankruptcy. So it was pretty devastating. And, you know, since then I have a son who's autistic and we're in and out of the system quite a bit. And I got to tell you, it's so rare that we have a good experience. And I think that's true for most people.
You know, and I think it's a shame, like you said, the average person isn't going to have a clue what these bills are saying, what they look like. I was talking to my dad the other day and I was saying something about my EOB says this, and he's like, what's an EOB? You know, and I told him every medical bill I get, I question, I look at, I call, because I swear 75% are wrong. Something's wrong with it. And, you know, when my grandmother was alive and she was sick, I would look at her bills for her and constantly seeing things on there. And I'm, you know, I remember thinking, I have very limited knowledge on all of this, but imagine my 80 something year old grandmother getting these bills and trying to figure out, do I pay it? Do I not pay it? Can I be balance billed? Am I not allowed? And again, like surprise billing, you know, all of that stuff was just so crazy. And I think also looking at, even before you go see the doctor, just knowing what specialist should I see? Should I be seeing that doctor? You know, I think a lot of times doctors will say, our PCP will say, you need to see a specialist, go see this person. Happens with my parents all the time. I'm referring you to this person. No idea if that specialist is high quality. No idea if they have any sanctions against them. We don't know anything about them. We just know that Dr. Smith said, go see Dr. Johnson, and that's what we do. Right. And it's, there's so many opportunities there for people to know or to be educated or to understand, but they just don't know how to, and they don't know where to go. So they just trust your doctor and they do what he says, because that's what we're told to do.
Well, and it's a really scary premise. And what you just mentioned is a perfect example. We're blindly following the trail that's being pointed at in front of us. And primary care doctors are really the saints of the system. They totally truly are.
Yes.
If we prioritize primary care as much as we prioritize maximizing hospitalizations and reimbursements, most people wouldn't need hospitalizations. And now we're seeing There's this kind of rumbling going on. We see direct primary care has become a big movement now, where doctors, primary care doctors, are finally saying, like, I don't want to do this to my patient because I'm referring my patient to someone who's in the system. I have no idea if that person is really appropriate. I just know that that's the right specialist.
Right. I'm just pulling it up in the system, and there's a list of names, and this doctor is closest, so I'm going to refer to you. Mm-hmm. But that's it. They don't. How would they know?
And they don't. And you know, their community has been so refreshing to learn from. One thing that I adopted just a couple of years ago was when we build health plans at EPAR Benefits, we have doctors on our staff and we ask them, is this a plan that will help a patient come see you, or is this going to be harmful? And, you know, there's a lot of insurance stuff that they don't know, and maybe they shouldn't know for good reason. But having the clinical perspective and them having our insurance or our financial perspective has been totally game changing. Like, we've had this fence up between us. We're trying to build health plans so that people can get health care, but we're not consulting anybody who actually delivers health care.
Right.
Which is wild to me, right? I'm like, I wouldn't go seek legal advice from, you know, an accountant, probably.
Right.
It wasn't making a lot of sense. And so I think you're right. It's become this process where it's just like, see the patient, put them to the next step, see the patient, send them down the hall. But nobody knows what's happening to that patient when they leave the office.
Right.
And that patient has no idea. They're just like, well, I got an order. Let me go figure that out. And we wonder why we have like so much chronic illness and comorbidities.
Absolutely.
And people who are skipping medications because it's confusing, it's expensive, and a lot of us are just discarded when we get to the end.
And I don't think it's practical for us to expect the average patient, the average person to understand all the intricacies of the healthcare system, of their insurance plans. You know, I think it pays to be educated, but there's a lot going on. They got a lot going on. And for them to have to be expected to know all of this, I don't think it's practical.
Well, no. And that's why we're seeing, you know, advocacy organizations that are becoming so necessary, even in our employer health plans. You know, you mentioned in the intro the company that I work for, and I think it's important to note that my company doesn't write any business with traditional insurance carriers. We build all of our health plans on a self-funded chassis, and we replace the network with some alternative that works better, saves money, and we have better insight into. But one of the things that we found that is really paramount to the success, especially for patients who are in our plans, is having advocacy services, like having someone they can call and be like, this makes no sense whatsoever. No idea what I'm doing. Don't even know if my doctor made the right call here.
Right.
So it's like, we need
I'm not even sure what's wrong with me.
I know. And we need auditors to, like, you know, say, hold on, let me take a look at what the advice you're being given. And
yeah.
And thankfully, you know, we have a lot of organizations now that care about patient advocacy. We have a lot of nurses that are getting involved. They're leaving the bedside so that they can advocate for patients because they're seeing the harm. So, you know, you guys are a great example of that. Like, that's really what we need. We need someone to, like, help us through and make sure that we're doing the right thing and we're getting well.
Right. So, you know, you work with companies, people who provide healthcare plans for their employees. So let's talk about those employers. What are some things that those employers can do? And I know you've mentioned a couple things that you guys do, but what are some things that they can do to drive high quality, affordable healthcare?
So to be honest with you, the very, very, very best thing that you can do is stop working with big insurance carriers. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of people, when I say that, they're like, well, how do I get healthcare then? Which is astounding to me. And I used to take that approach too, you know, without insurance, how do I get healthcare? But the truth is, you don't need insurance in this country to see a doctor. You can go to any doctor, be uninsured, cash pay, whatever the case might be. But you can also create a health plan that the only level of insurance that you have or the layer of insurance that you have is the stop loss to protect you, right? That's what insurance is supposed to be. It's supposed to protect you from catastrophic financial loss. So that's where we layer it. And then we take out the insurance carriers and the networks, because now we have full insight and we have a direct relationship now with the healthcare delivery system. We're not going through a carrier. We're not asking them permission. We're not paying them premium to turn around and underpay our doctors. We're just going straight to the doctors and creating good prices. We can look up their quality. It's not hidden behind a PPO contract or provider contract. And it works for almost all size employers. A lot of small employers, so if you're under 50, let's say, there's a lot of hesitation to do something on a self-funded chassis, which is understandable. There's some risk there. But, you know, even if you're small beans, just go get your employees a direct primary care membership. They're all over the place now. You can go to dpcfrontier.com and look for one. And just give them a direct primary care membership, and then look into cost sharing plans, look into having a catastrophic plan to cover the rest. There's so many things. And there's companies now that are creating level funded plans with no network. So you can, it's just a case of being represented by the right advisor who is not incentivized by insurance carrier commissions. That's a thing. That's another topic. But look for the solutions. So look outside of the big logos on your ID card, and you'll find there's, like, this entire ecosystem of available alternatives as soon as you close those doors and look down the hall.
And that's what I was going to ask you, is there are benefits advisors like you who focus on those sorts of things. So you can find those benefits advisors. And I think, you know, what advice would you give benefits advisors who maybe are looking to offer their clients sort of a better way to provide healthcare?
So I'll shamelessly plug myself, because we have a co-consultant program at ePowered, and we launched it in 2018 because we actually had, there was a consultant out of Michigan who called up and said, I just want to learn what you're doing. Would you mind if I shadowed you for a day? And he followed my partner around, literally followed him around to all of his meetings for a day. And he was our first mentee. And that created what is now the co-consultant program, where you can come work with us. You can come work alongside us, keep all of your business, and we'll tell you how to do it. But on top of that, the event that we host every year, the UPowered Symposium every February, you'll connect with hundreds upon hundreds of advisors or solution providers or stakeholders and tons of doctors and nurses who will gladly welcome you and be like, hey, come on, I'll show you, like, little by little. So again, it take the blinders off. This goes for employers too. If you're using an advisor who hasn't brought you anything other than a renewal increase for the last few years, why are you still hiring them? You know, you wouldn't allow an employee to inflate your company's cost year over year over year without, you know, some kind of performance improvement plan, right?
Right.
We continue to work with our advisors who are inflating our costs. So start looking like right here at home. What are you doing here with your advisor? And then ask them, what are the alternatives? Like, what is my Blue Cross alternative? And see what they say.
That's fantastic. Well, Emma, this has been a great conversation. I really appreciate you joining us today. Before we get off, I would love to let you plug anything you want to plug, and how can people reach out to you?
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. I would love people to reach out to me. Check out the U-Powered Symposium, upoweredsymposium.com. That's our annual event.
And that's Y-O-U, correct?
Yes, Y-O-U, U-Powered. And our association will be launching July 1st. So the Association for Healthcare Advisors is an association that's targeted at verifying the transparency and ethical business conduct of benefits advisors or healthcare advisors. So that's launching July 1st. It's a really good place to get education and start connecting with people who are doing alternative funding models. That's afhca.org. But I'm also on LinkedIn and I'm pretty easy to find. And I love getting messages and I love connecting. So any of those, you can reach me.
Well, thank you so much, Emma. Emma's leaving for a worldwide trip tomorrow. So I wish you the best and I hope it's an enjoyable trip. And we are so glad that you talked to us today and for sharing your insights.
Thanks, Megan.
That wraps up this episode of For Your Benefits. We hope that you enjoyed today's conversation. If you like what you heard today and you want to hear more, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. We will keep you updated on what's happening in the world of employee health and well-being. So thank you and have a great day.